We were both panting pretty hard. She drank water and hung her head between her legs, and I watched in sadness as she vomited in the parking lot. "You okay?" a young woman asked sympathetically. Maya waved a hand without even looking up. The next day, we did find Belinda for work. Maya's gait was so stiff and painful, I deliberately did find at half speed, slowing down as soon as I was out of sight. I returned for direction far more than was necessary, just to check on her, and when I finally found Belinda sitting under a tree, she had fallen asleep.
"Good dog. You are such a good dog, Ellie," Maya whispered to me.
We woke up Belinda, who checked her wrist and emanated a quick shock of surprise.
"Just had an off day," Maya said.
Belinda didn't reply. That night, Maya called me while she was in the bathtub. I sniffed curiously at the bubbles in the tub and lapped up a little of the water, wondering why anyone would want to swim in such a small enclosure. Certainly the cats weren't interested. Tinker Bell was, as usual, hiding from the world. Stella was conducting an unauthorized examination of my bed. I could tell by the smell of it that she'd even tried sleeping there. And Emmett was in the bathroom with me, licking himself and waiting for something to happen that he could ignore. Maya was sad. She reached a wet hand out and stroked my head.
"I'm sorry, Ellie. I'm just not good enough. I just can't keep up with you in the field. You're such a good dog. You need someone who can handle you."
I wondered if she would be happier if I got into the tub with her. I put my paws up on the edge of the tub, testing the theory a little. Emmett stopped licking himself and looked at me without any of the proper respect, then lifted his tail and waltzed out of there, as if daring me to chase him down and reduce the cat population in the house.
"Tomorrow I have a surprise for you, Ellie," Maya said, still sad.
Well, okay, I'd gone this far. I climbed into the tub, sinking through the insubstantial bubbles.
"Ellie!" Maya laughed, her delight blowing out the sadness like a candle.
Chapter 22.
The next morning I was excited to go for a car ride because, well, it was a car ride. I also picked up some happy anticipation from Maya, so I knew we weren't going to work because lately there hadn't been much happiness associated with that. But it wasn't until she stopped and opened the door that I realized where I was. Jacob's apartment. I ran ahead of Maya, bounding up the stairs and barking at the door, which I would never have done when I lived with him. I could smell Jacob inside and hear him moving to the door. He opened it, and I barreled into him, leaping and twisting joyously.
"Ellie, how are you, girl? Sit," he commanded.
I dropped my bottom onto the floor, but it didn't want to stay there.
"Hi, Jacob," Maya said from the doorway.
"Come on in, Maya," Jacob said.
I was so thrilled to see Jacob, I sat by his side as he eased into a chair. I wanted to climb into his lap, and if it had been Ethan, I probably would have. But with Jacob, there was never any nonsense like that. I sniffed around the apartment while the two of them talked. My bed was gone, I noticed, but my scent was still in the bedroom, and I would have no problem sleeping on the carpet or in Jacob's bed if he wanted. Then I trotted back out to be with Jacob, passing by Maya, who reached a friendly hand out to stroke my back, and that's when it hit me. Going back to Jacob would mean leaving Maya. Dogs are not allowed to choose where they live. My fate would be decided by people, but I nonetheless felt torn inside, conflicted. Jacob was far better at work than Maya, but Maya didn't carry that inner core of sadness with her all the time. She felt genuine joy at Mama's house, where there were all the children to play with. Yet Jacob didn't have any cats. I had a clear purpose: to find, show, and save people. I was a good dog. Both Maya and Jacob were focused on work, and that meant neither one of them could ever love me with the utter abandon of Ethan. But Maya embraced me with an unguarded affection that Jacob never allowed himself to feel. I began to pace anxiously. "Do you need to go out?" Maya asked me. I heard "out," but she didn't say it with any enthusiasm, so I didn't react.
"No, when she needs to do that, she sits by the door," Jacob said.
"Oh, right, I've seen her do that," Maya said. "I just leave my back door open a lot of the time, so, you know, she can come and go." They were silent for a bit. I eased into the kitchen, but as usual, the floor was antiseptically clean, free of anything edible.
"I heard you're taking disability," Maya said.
"Yeah, well, I've been shot twice in 5 years. That'd be enough for anybody," Jacob replied with a gruff laugh.
"You'll be missed," Maya observed.
"No, I'm not leaving town. I'm enrolled at UCLA. Full-time. I have only a year and a half left for my law degree."
There was another silence. A tiny signal of distress came off of Maya, something I'd noticed before when others tried to talk to Jacob, and instead wound up sitting there without saying anything. Something about him made people uncomfortable.
"So when are you up for certification?" Jacob asked.
I picked a neutral spot on the floor between the two of them and lay down with a sigh, unable to figure out what was going to happen.
"2 weeks, but..." Maya trailed off.
"But?" Jacob prompted. "I'm thinking of resigning from the program," Maya confessed in a rush. "I just can't keep up. I didn't realize. Well, someone else would probably be better."
"You can't do that," Jacob said.
I raised my head and looked at him curiously, wondering why he was feeling angry.
"You can't keep switching handlers on a dog. Ellie is the best dog anyone has ever seen. You dump her like that, you could ruin her. Wally says the two of you have a rapport."
I thumped my tail a little at my name, and Wally's being mentioned by Jacob, but his tone was still very stern.
"I'm just not cut out for it physically, Jacob," Maya said. I could feel anger stirring in her, too.
"I'm not an ex-Marine. I'm just a beat cop who can barely pass the physical every year. I've been trying, but it's just too hard."
"Too hard?" Jacob glared at her until Maya shrugged and looked away. Her anger turned to shame, and I went over to her to nuzzle her hand.
"What about how hard it would be on Ellie? Doesn't that matter?"
"Of course it matters."
"You're saying you're not willing to work."
"I'm saying I'm not cut out for this, Jacob. I don't have what it takes inside."
"What it takes? Inside?"
I could sense that Maya was grappling with the rising tide of emotion that sometimes led to a flood of tears. I wanted to comfort her and shoved my nose under her hand again. When Jacob spoke again, he wasn't looking at Maya, and his voice was quieter.
"When I was shot the first time, my shoulder was so messed up, I had to learn to use it all over again. I went to physical therapy every day, and there was this little 2-pound weight on a pulley, and that thing hurt. And my wife was in her final round of chemo. More than once, I wanted to give up. It was too hard."
Jacob turned his head and blinked at Maya.
"But Susan was dying, and she never gave up, not until the very end. And if she could keep going, I knew I had to. Because it's important. Because failure isn't an option if success is just a matter of more effort."
"I know it's difficult, Maya. Try harder." The same old dark pain swirled around inside Jacob like a storm, and the anger left him as if blown away by a gust of wind. He sagged in his chair, suddenly exhausted. Somehow, I knew then that I wouldn't be staying with Jacob. He just wasn't interested in find anymore. Sadness was flowing through Maya, but
Through it, I felt a rising resolve, a strength like what came over her the day she took me running along the ocean.
"Okay, you're right," she told Jacob.
Jacob petted my head when we left, saying goodbye without regret. The last glimpse I had of him was as he shut the door, and he wasn't looking at me. He and Maya had decided my fate, and it was up to me to do what they wanted. Later, Maya and I drove up into the hills. She ran until she was so tired she stumbled, and the next day, after work, we ran some more. It was gloriously fun, except that Maya often felt full of despair and pain by the end of the course. A few evenings later, we pulled into the driveway, and Maya was literally too tired to get out of the car. We sat there, sweat running from her face, with the windows open.
"I'm going to fail, Ellie. I'm so sorry," Maya said mournfully.
I could see Emmett and Stella both watching from the window. They probably didn't even know what a car was. Tinkerbell, I assumed, had become alarmed at the sound of our approach and was cowering under something.
"Are you okay, Maya?"
Al asked softly. The wind was working against me, so I hadn't smelled his approach. I put my head out the window for him to pet.
"Oh, hi, Al."
She stood up out of the car.
"Yes, I was just thinking."
"Oh, I saw you pulled up in your car."
"Yes."
"So I came over to see if you needed any help."
"No, no. I was just running with the dog."
I slid out of the front seat and squatted in the yard, staring pointedly at Emmett and Stella, who looked away in disgust.
"Okay."
Al drew in a deep breath.
"You've lost weight, Maya."
"What?" Maya stared at him. Al recoiled in horror.
"Not that you were fat, I just noticed in your shorts your legs looked so thin."
A gust of misery flowed off of him, and he was backing away.
"I should go."
"Thank you, Al. That was sweet," Maya said. He arrested his retreat and stood up straight.
"In my opinion, you don't need to exercise anymore. You are perfect the way you are."
Maya laughed at this, and then Al laughed. I wagged my tail to show the cats at the window that I understood the joke, and they didn't. A week or so later, Maya and I did one of my favorite things, which was to go to the park with a lot of other dogs and work on the toys. At her command, I crawled into the tight tube and up and down the tippy board. I climbed slowly down a ladder and demonstrated that I could sit patiently on a narrow beam 2 feet off the ground, all the while ignoring the other dogs. Our find consisted of locating a man who had dropped some old socks as he blundered off into the woods. Maya was bursting with eagerness, so I went at it at full speed, even when she began to huff and sweat. I knew he was high in a tree even before I found him, because Wally had tried that on me a few times, and it always affected the way the human scent drifted on the wind. Maya was a little mystified, though, that I was alerting at the base of the tree, when clearly the man wasn't standing there. I sat, patiently staring up at the grinning man, until she got it. That night there was a big party at Mama's house. Everyone was petting me and saying my name. "Now that you are certified, you need to eat," Mama told Maya. The doorbell rang, which hardly ever happened at that house. People usually just burst in. I followed Mama to the door, and when she opened it, Mama's heart soared. It was Al, and he gave some flowers to Mama. I remembered Ethan giving Hannah flowers, and I was confused because I thought Al liked Maya, not Mama. But I'll never really understand people when it comes to stuff like this. The whole family grew quiet when Al stepped out into the backyard where the picnic tables were set up. Maya went over to Al, and they both felt nervous as he briefly pressed his mouth to her face.
Then Maya said everyone's name, and Al shook hands with the men, and everyone started talking and laughing again. Over the next several days, we found and saved two children who had wandered away from their houses, plus backtracked a horse's path to find a woman who had fallen off and hurt her leg. I remembered Flair dumping Ethan in the woods and wondered why people even bothered to own horses since they were obviously unreliable. If people had a dog or two and were still not satisfied, they should probably consider getting a donkey, like Jasper the donkey, who at least made Grandpa laugh. Maya and I also found an old man in the woods who was dead. I was depressed to sniff out his cold body lying in the dirt, because that wasn't saving people, and though Maya praised me, neither one of us was much interested in playing with the stick afterward. We went to Al's house, and he served Maya a chicken dinner, and they both laughed and then ate a pizza a boy brought over. I sniffed at the chicken pieces Al put on the floor for me and ate them more out of politeness than anything, since they were so encrusted with what tasted like soot. Later that evening, I could tell she was telling him about the dead man, because her feeling of sadness was the same. Jacob and I had found a few dead people, too, but it never made him sad, the same way that finding people and saving them never really seemed to make him glad. He just did the work, not feeling much one way or the other. When I thought about Jacob, I realized that his cold dedication to find helped me get over my separation from Ethan. There was no time for grieving. I had too much work to do. Maya, though, was more complex, and the way she loved me made me miss my boy. Not with the same sharp, painful ache in my chest, but with a wistful sadness that often came to me as I was lying down for the night and rode with me into my dreams. One day, Maya and I took a plane ride and then a chopper ride straight south. I thought about the day Jacob was taken away and was glad I was back to being a chopper dog. She was both excited and uneasy on the flight, which wasn't, frankly, nearly as much fun as a car ride because the noise hurt my ears. We landed in a place unlike any I'd ever seen before. There were lots of dogs and policemen, and the air was filled with the sound of sirens and the smell of smoke. Buildings everywhere were in a state of collapse, their roofs sometimes all the way on the ground. Maya seemed stunned, and I pressed up against her, yawning anxiously. A man approached us. He was dirty and wore a plastic helmet. His hands, when he held them to me, smelled of ashes, blood, and clay. He shook hands with Maya.
"I'm coordinating the U.S. response in this sector. Thanks for coming down."
"I had no idea it was going to be this bad," Maya said.
"Oh, this is just the tip of the iceberg. The El Salvadoran government is completely overwhelmed. We've got more than 4,000 people injured, hundreds dead, and we're still finding folks trapped. There have been more than a half dozen aftershocks since January 13th, some of them pretty bad. Be careful going in these places."
Maya put me on a leash and led me through the maze of rubble. We'd come to a house, and some men who were following us would check it, and then sometimes Maya would let me off the leash, and I'd go in, and sometimes she'd keep me on the leash, and we would just find along the outside of the house.
"This one's not safe, Ellie. I have to keep you on a leash so you won't go in there," Maya told me.
One of the men was named Vernon, and he smelled like goats, reminding me of trips to town with Ethan and Grandpa. It was one of the rare times I thought of Ethan while working. Doing fine meant putting all of that away and concentrating on the job. Over the next several hours, Maya and I found four people. They were all dead. My excitement over fine soured after the second one. By the time I came across the fourth person, a young woman lying beneath a jumble of bricks, I almost didn't alert Maya. She sensed my mood and tried to reassure me, petting me and waving the rubber bone at me, in which I had very little interest.
"Vernon, would you do me a favor and go hide somewhere?" she asked. I lay down tiredly at her feet.
"Hide?"
he asked uncertainly. "She needs to find someone alive. Would you go hide? Like over in that house we just searched? And when she locates you, act all excited?"
Yeah. Okay.
I registered Vernon's departure without interest.
"Okay, Ellie. Ready? Ready to find?"
I wearily rose to my feet.
"Let's go, Ellie,"
Maya said. Her excitement seemed fake, but I trotted over to a house we'd already searched.
"Find!"
Maya commanded. I went into the house and stopped, puzzled. Though we'd all been in here already, I thought Vernon's smell was somehow more intense. Curious, I padded to the back of the house. Yes, there was a pile of blankets in the corner, from which came a strong Vernon scent, full of sweat and heat and goats. I raced back to Maya.
"Show!"
she urged. She followed me at a run, and when she peeled back the blankets, Vernon leaped up laughing.
"You found me! Good dog, Ellie!"
he shouted, rolling on the blankets with me. I jumped on him and licked his face, and we played with the rubber bone for a while. Maya and I worked all night, and we found more people, including Vernon, who became better and better at hiding. But I'd worked with Wally, so no one could fool me for very long. Everyone else Maya and I found was dead. The sun was coming up when we came to a building from which sharp, acrid smoke still rose. I was back on the leash, my eyes watering at an intense chemical smell coming out from the collapsed concrete. I found a dead man lying crushed beneath a flat section of wall and alerted Maya.
"We know about him," someone told Maya. "We can't get him out just yet. Whatever is in those barrels is toxic. Going to need a cleanup crew."
Some metal barrels leaked a steady stream of liquid that filled my nose with a scalding odor. I concentrated on pushing the scent away, trying to find.
"Okay, good dog. Let's go somewhere else, Ellie."
There! I smelled another person, and alerted, going rigid. It was a woman, and her scent was faint, riding out just behind the chemicals clogging the air.
"It's okay, Ellie. We're going to leave this one here. Come on,"
Maya said. She tugged gently on my leash.
"Come, Ellie."
I alerted again, agitated.
"We couldn't leave. This one was alive."
Chapter 23.
"We see the victim, Ellie. We're going to have to leave him here. Come on,"
Maya said. I understood that she wanted to leave and wondered if perhaps she thought that I was alerting because of the dead person.
"Does she want to find me again?"
Vernon asked. I stared up at Maya, willing her to understand. Maya glanced around.
"Here? Everything's collapsed. It's too dangerous.
Tell you what, though, it would be fun for her to chase you a little. Go up the street a little bit and call her, and I'll let her off the leash." I didn't pay attention to Vernon as he trotted away. My focus was on the person hidden in the rubble. I could smell fear, though the biting odor from the chemicals was clawing at my nose the way I'd once felt the spray from a skunk. Maya unsnapped my leash.
"Ellie, what's Vernon doing? Where's he going?"
"Hey, Ellie, look!"
Vernon shouted. He started to run slowly up the street. I stared after him. I wanted to chase him and play, but I had work to do. I turned back to the collapsed building.
"Ellie, no!"
Maya called. Had it been Jacob, the word "no" would have stopped me dead. But Maya didn't command me with the same hard tones. I dove headfirst into a narrow space next to the dead person, digging my way forward. My feet encountered a wet spill and started to sting, and the smell from the chemicals was so intense it blotted out everything else. I was reminded of playing rescue with Ethan, how I could find him in the depths by the merest whisper of his scent in the water. Choking, I tunneled ahead. Cooler air touched my face, and I squirmed through a hole and dropped into a narrow shaft. An updraft brought cleaner air into this area, though my nostrils were still aflame with the burning wet acid that had splashed on my snout. After a moment, I saw a woman huddled in the corner of the shaft, pressing a cloth to her face. Her eyes were big as they regarded me. I barked, unable to return to Maya to show.
"Ellie!"
Maya called, coughing.
"Get back, Maya,"
Vernon warned. I kept barking.
"Ellie!"
Maya shouted again, sounding closer. This time the woman heard her and started screaming back, the terror tumbling out of her.
"There's someone in there, someone alive!"
Maya yelled. I sat patiently with the woman, feeling her fear turn to hope, when a man wearing a helmet and a mask poked a flashlight into the shaft and waved the light over both of us. My eyes were watering, and my nose was running, my whole face still stinging from whatever it was I'd gotten on myself. Soon the sounds of digging and hammering reverberated through the space, and then a square of daylight broke into the shaft from above, and a man lowered himself down on a rope. The woman had obviously never practiced being lifted with a rope harness and was very afraid when the firemen tied her up and they hoisted her out. But I'd been through the maneuver several times and stepped unhesitatingly into the loops of rope when it was my turn. Maya was there at the top when they hauled me through the hole they dug in the wall, but her relief turned to alarm when she saw me.
"Oh, my God, Ellie, your nose!"
We ran together to a fire truck, where Maya, much to my disgust, talked one of the firefighters into giving me a bath. Well, it was more of a rinsing, cold water flowing down my face and bringing some relief to the burn on my nose. Maya and I took another chopper ride that day, and then a plane ride, and then we went to the man in the cool room, the vet, who carefully looked at my nose and put some cream on it that smelled awful, but felt wonderful.
"What was it, some kind of acid?"
the vet asked Maya.
"I don't know. Is she going to be okay?"
I felt Maya's love and concern and closed my eyes when she stroked my neck. I wished there were some way I could let her know that the pain wasn't all that bad.
"We'll want to watch for any signs of infection, but I don't see any reason why she shouldn't heal up just fine,"
he told Maya. For the next 2 weeks or so, Maya would gently rub the cream into my nose. Emmett and Stella seemed to find this pretty amusing and would sit on the counter and watch. Tinkerbell, though, loved it. She came out of wherever she'd been hiding and sniffed at the cream and then rubbed her head against mine, purring. When I'd lie down, Tinkerbell would sit and smell me, her tiny little nose bobbing up and down, and she even started curling up against me to sleep. It was almost more than I could stand. I was relieved to get away from the cats and go back to work. When Maya and I got to the park, I bounded up to Wally and Belinda, who were excited to see me.
"I hear you are the hero dog, Ellie. Good dog."
I wagged, excited to be a good dog. Wally then ran off while Belinda and Maya sat at a picnic table.
"So, how are you and Wally doing?"
Maya said. I sat impatiently. If we went after him now, we could find Wally right away.
"He's taking me to meet his parents over the 4th, so..."
Belinda replied.
"That's good."
I groaned at all this conversation. Humans were capable of so many amazing things, but too often they just sat making words, not doing anything.
"Down, Ellie," Maya said.
I reluctantly lay down.
pointedly looking off in the direction Wally had taken. After what seemed ages, Maya and I were finally allowed to find. I joyously took off, not having to slow down, because she was able to keep pace with me. Wally had done an excellent job of disguising his scent. I lifted my nose, searching for any trace of him. There were few odors on the air today to distract me, but I couldn't find Wally. I coursed back and forth, returning to Maya for direction. Carefully, she worked the area, and when I didn't pick up a scent, she moved me to a new place, and I tried there.
"What's the matter, girl? You okay, Ellie?"
Oddly, though the wind was coming from behind him, I actually heard Wally before I smelled him. He was walking straight toward us. I rocketed forward until my nose told me it was him, and then returned to Maya, who had already started talking to Wally, her voice a shout.
"We're having sort of an off day," she said.
"I guess so. I've never seen her fail before."
"Hey, Ellie, how you doing?" Wally said to me. We played a little with a stick.
"Tell you what, Maya, you focus her attention away from me. I'm going to go over that ridge there and double back a little. Give me about 10 minutes, Wally said.
"You sure?"
"She's been out of action for a couple of weeks. Let's allow her to have an easy one."
I was conscious of Wally leaving, even though Maya had handed me the rubber bone and was now trying to get it away from me. I could hear him and knew he was hiding again, which made me happy. When Maya finally shouted, "Find!" I took off eagerly, heading in the direction I'd heard him go. I ran up a small hill and stopped, uncertain. I didn't know how he was doing it, but somehow Wally was keeping his scent out of the air. I ran back to Maya for direction, and she sent me off to my right. I snaked back and forth, searching. No Wally! Then she directed me to the left. Again, no sign of Wally. This time she had me return left and walked with me, leading me around the base of the hill. I was virtually upon Wally when I found him. He moved, and I alerted. There was no need to run back because Maya was standing there.
"This isn't good, is it?" Maya asked. "The vet said she should be fully recovered by now."
"Well, let's give it another week, see if she gets any better," Wally said. He felt sad for some reason, so I nuzzled his hand.
Maya and I didn't work very much over the next couple of weeks, and when we did, Wally continued to fool me, disguising his scent so that I could only pick it up when he was right there in front of me.
"What does it mean that Ellie is decertified? Does it mean you will lose your job?"
Al asked one night. I'm not a big fan of feet, but I allowed Al to take off his shoes and rub my tummy with his toes, because they didn't smell as bad as usual.
"No, but I'll be reassigned. I've been on a desk for the past several weeks, but I'm not really cut out for that. I'll probably request a transfer to go back out on patrol,"
Maya replied. Stealthily, Al dropped a tiny piece of meat on the carpet in front of me. It was the main reason why I liked to lie in front of him at dinner. I silently licked it up while Stella gave me dirty looks from the couch.
"I don't like to think about you being on patrol. It is so dangerous."
"Albert," Maya sighed.
"What about Ellie?"
I looked up at my name, but Al didn't hand down any more meat.
"I don't know. She can't work anymore. Her sense of smell is too damaged. So she'll be retired. She'll live with me. Right, Ellie?"
I wagged, pleased with the way she said my name, full of affection. After dinner, we took a car ride to the ocean. The sun was setting, and Maya and Al set a blanket out between two trees and talked while the waves came in.
"It's so beautiful," Maya said.
I figured they probably wanted to play with a stick or a ball or something, but I was on a leash and couldn't go find one for them. I felt bad that they had nothing to do.
Al got my attention by becoming afraid. His heart started to pound audibly, and I could feel his nervous energy as he wiped his hands on his pants over and over.
Maya, when you moved here, so many months I wanted to talk to you. You are so beautiful.
Maya laughed.
Oh, Al, I'm not beautiful. Come on.
Some boys down by the water ran by, tossing a saucer at each other. I watched it alertly, thinking of Ethan and the stupid flip. I wondered if Ethan had ever been to the ocean, and if he had, if he brought the flip and threw it out into the waves, where I hope it sank and was never found again.
Ethan. I could remember how he never did anything without taking me with him, except school. I loved the sense of purpose I got from work, but there were certainly days, like this one, when I thought of Ethan and missed being a doodle dog more than anything.
Al was still afraid, and I glanced at him curiously, pulled away from the sight of the boys by his continued alarm. Was there some sort of danger? I couldn't see any. We were all alone in this part of the park.
You are the most wonderful woman in the world, he said. I love you, Maya.
Maya started to feel afraid, too. What was going on? I sat up.
I love you, too, Al.
I know I'm not rich. I know I'm not handsome, Al said.
Oh, my God.
Maya breathed.
Her heart was beating now, too. But I will love you all my life if you will let me.
Al turned on the blanket, rising to his knees.
Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
Maya said.
Will you marry me, Maya?
Al asked.
Chapter 24
One day, Maya and Mama and all of the brothers and sisters and other family members came together in a big building and sat quietly while I demonstrated a new trick I'd been taught, which was to walk very slowly down a narrow path between wooden benches, mount some carpeted stairs, and stand patiently while Al removed something from a small pack I carried on my back. Then everyone sat and admired me, while Maya and Al had a conversation. Maya was wearing a big fluffy outfit, so I knew we weren't going to the park to play afterward, but that was okay because everyone seemed so glad at how well I'd done the trick. Mama even cried, she was so happy. Then we went to Mama's house, and children ran around and fed me cake. A few months later, we all moved into a different house with a much better backyard. It had a garage, too, but thankfully no one suggested I sleep out there. Al and Maya slept together, and though they didn't mind when I jumped up to be with them, there was frankly no room to get a good night's sleep. And anyway, the cats kept climbing up there, too, so I eventually learned to lie on the floor next to Maya's side, where I could get up and follow her if she awoke during the middle of the night and went anywhere. Gradually, I came to understand that we wouldn't be doing work anymore. I could only conclude that we'd found everybody who needed to be found, and that Wally and Belinda had lost interest in the whole process. Maya still went running, though, and Al sometimes went with us, though he had trouble keeping up. I was therefore surprised when Maya excitedly loaded me into the truck and took me for a car ride. It felt like we were going to do work, except that Maya's mood was different, less urgent. She took me to a big building and told me it was a school. This was confusing to me, as I had learned that school was something where Ethan went away. It wasn't a place, it was a state of being without the boy. I stuck to Maya's side, though, as we entered a big noisy room filled with children who were all excited and laughing. I sat with Maya and watched the children who were doing their best to sit still. I was reminded of Ethan and Chelsea and the children in our neighborhood, always full of energy. A bright light was in my eyes. A woman spoke and then all the girls and boys clapped, startling me. I wagged my tail, feeling a collective joy washing off the children. Maya walked me forward, and when she spoke, her voice was very loud and seemed to come from both next to me and at the back of the room. "This is Ellie. She is a retired search and rescue dog. As part of our outreach program, I wanted to come to talk to you about how Ellie has helped find lost children and what you can do if you ever become lost," Maya said. I yawned, wondering what this was all about. After we stood around doing nothing for about half an hour, Maya led me down off the stage, and the children lined up and then came up in small groups to pat me. Some of them hugged with unabashed affection, and some of them held back, a little afraid. I wagged my tail in reassurance, and one girl put a timid hand out, which I licked. She snatched her hand back, squealing, no longer frightened. Though Maya and I no longer did work, we very often did school. Sometimes the children were little, and sometimes they weren't children at all, but people as old as Grandma and Grandpa. Sometimes Maya and I went to places full of chemical smells and people who were in pain or feeling sad and sick as they lay in bed, and we would linger with these people until some of their sadness lifted. I could always tell when we were doing school because Maya would take extra time getting dressed in the morning. The days we didn't do school, she dressed hurriedly and sometimes ran out the door with Al chuckling. Then Al would leave too, and I'd be stuck at home with the stupid cats. Though I no longer wore nose cream, Tinkerbell persisted in hanging near me and cuddling up against me when I'd take a nap. I was glad that Al wasn't there to see it. Al had a lot of affection for me, but for the cats, not so much. Tinkerbell hid from Al, while Stella only approached him when Al had food, and Emmett would occasionally strut over to Al and loftily rub against him as if putting cat fur on his pants was doing him some kind of favor. We'd been doing school for several years when Maya broke the pattern. We were in a place called class, which was smaller than some of the rooms in which I'd been and which was filled with children who all seemed about the same age. These particular children were very little and sat on the floor on blankets. I was a little envious. Most of my time at home was spent napping, and I didn't seem to have the energy that I'd once had. So I decided that if the children wanted me to lie on a blanket with them, I'd be willing to do so. Maya called forward one of the children, who approached shyly. Her name was Alyssa, and she gave me a hug. When I licked her face, the children laughed. But Maya and I had never done this before, had a single child come forward, and I wasn't sure what it was about. The woman who sat at the big desk, the teacher, said, "Alyssa has never actually met Ellie before, but if it weren't for Ellie, Alyssa would never have been born." Soon all the children were touching me, which was much more typical of how school went. Sometimes the children were a little rough, and at this school a boy pulled sharply on my ears, but I just let him do it. At the end of school, the children raced out the door, but the little girl, Alyssa, stayed behind, as did the teacher. Maya seemed excited about something, so I waited expectantly, and then a man and a woman came into the classroom, and Alyssa ran to them. The man was Jacob. I bounded over to him. He stooped down, scratching my ears. "How are you, Ellie? Look how gray you're getting." The woman picked up Alyssa. "Daddy used to work with Ellie. Did you know that?" "Yes," said Alyssa. Maya hugged Jacob and the woman, who set Alyssa back down so she could pet me some more. I sat and regarded Jacob. He was so different than when I last saw him. The coldness in him seemed to have gone away. This little girl, Alyssa, I realized, was his child, and the woman was the girl's mother. Jacob had a family now, and he was happy. That's what was different. In all the time I'd known him, Jacob had never once been happy.
"I'm glad you're doing this community outreach program," Jacob told Maya. "A dog like Ellie needs to work."
I registered my name and the word work, but there was no sense in the room that we had an urgent need to find. Jacob just always talked about work. That was his way. It was very pleasant to be there with Jacob and feel the love pour out of him when he looked at his family. I eased down onto the floor, so happy I thought I might nap.
"We've got to get you home," the woman said to Alyssa.
"Can Ellie come?"
Alyssa asked. Everyone laughed.
"Ellie," Jacob said.
I sat up. He bent down again, holding my face in his hands.
"You are a good dog, Ellie. A good dog."
The feel of his rough hands on my fur took me back to when I was a puppy, first learning my work. I wagged my tail, full of love for this man. Yet there was no question that I was happy with Maya. So, when we all left each other in the hallway, I unquestioningly followed her, my nails clicking.
"Good dog, Ellie," Maya murmured.
"Wasn't it fun to see Jacob?"
"Bye, Ellie,"
little Alyssa called, her tiny voice echoing in the quiet hall. Maya stopped and turned, so I did too, and my last sight of Jacob was of him picking up his daughter, grinning at me. That year, Emmett and Stella both died. Maya cried and was very sad, and Al was a little sad too. The house seemed empty without them, and Tinkerbell needed constant assurance from me now that she was the only cat. Several times a day I'd awaken from a nap to find her pressed up against me, or even more disconcerting, standing and staring at me. I didn't understand her attachment to me, and knew it was not my purpose in life to be the substitute mother for a feline, but I didn't mind it much, and even let her lick me sometimes, because it seemed to make her happy. The best days were when it rained, which it did infrequently. The smells seemed to leap off the ground the way they did when I was a puppy. I could usually sense when the thickening clouds meant moisture, and remembered how much more often it rained back on the farm. I found myself thinking of the farm much more often now. The farm and Ethan. Though my life with Fast and Sister and the yard with Coco had faded to a distant memory, it seemed that sometimes I awoke with a start and lifted my head, thinking I'd just heard Ethan's car door slam, and that he would soon walk in, calling my name. One day, when rain seemed imminent, Maya and I were doing school, in a class with children who sat in chairs instead of on blankets. There was a sudden crack of lightning, and all the children jumped and laughed, and then turned to look as a huge storm made the sky black and pounded the building with a roar of rain. I inhaled, wishing they'd open the windows to let in the fragrances.
"Settle down, class," said the teacher.
The door to the classroom suddenly opened, and a man and a woman came inside, both of them wet.
"We've lost Jeffrey Hicks," the man said.
I picked up the tension in his voice and regarded the two of them alertly. The alarm coming off the two people was familiar, an emotion I'd encountered several times when I was doing work.
"He's a first grader,"
the man told Maya. The children all started talking.
"Quiet,"
the teacher snapped.
"They were playing hide-and-seek when the rain started," the woman said. "The storm just came up out of nowhere. One minute it was fine, the next—"
She put her hands to her eyes, which were suddenly full of tears.
"When I had everyone come in, Jeffrey wasn't with them. It was his turn to hide."
"Could the dog—"
the man asked. Maya looked at me. I sat up straighter.
"You'd better call 911, she said. "Ellie hasn't worked search and rescue in 7 or 8 years.
Won't the rain wash away the scent? "It's really coming down out there?" the woman asked. "I'm worried that by the time another dog got here..."
Maya bit her lip. "We will certainly help, look. You need to call the police, though. Where do you think he might have gone?"
"There are some woods behind the playground. There's a fence, but the kids can lift it up," the man said.
"This is his backpack. Will that help?" the woman asked, holding out a canvas bag.
I felt Maya's nervous excitement as we ran down the hallway. We stopped at the door, and a sense of defeat came over her.
"Look at it rain," she muttered.
"Okay. Ellie..."
She lowered her face down to mine.
"Ellie, you ready, girl?
Here, smell this." I took a deep whiff of the canvas bag. I could smell peanut butter, chocolate, crayons, and a person.
"Jeffrey, Jeffrey," Maya said.
"Okay?" She opened the door, and the rain whipped into the hallway.
"Find!"
I leaped out into the rain. In front of me was a wide expanse of wet pavement, and I coursed back and forth, my nails clicking. I could faintly smell many children, though the rain was beating the scents down. Maya was out, running away from the school.
"Here, Ellie, find here!"
We tracked all the way back to the fence. Nothing. Maya felt frustrated and frightened as she sloshed through the wet ground. We found a section of fence that was bent back, but I could find nothing to alert on.
"Okay, if he's in there, you'd smell him, girl, right? Jeffrey!" she shouted. "Jeffrey, come on out, it's all right."
We hugged the fence, heading back to the school, sticking to the other side of the yard. A police car pulled up, lights flashing, and Maya jogged over to speak to the man driving. I continued to find Jeffrey. Though I wasn't picking up much of anything, I knew if I just concentrated as I had been trained, if I just focused, I could separate the smell from the backpack from all the others. If I didn't quit... There. I had something, and whipped my head around. There was a small gap in the fence, two poles between which no adult person could climb, but I could smell Jeffrey. He'd squeezed through here. He had left the playground. I ran back to Maya and alerted. She was speaking to the policeman and didn't notice at first, but then she turned to me, shocked.
"Ellie, show me."
We ran back through the rain to the two poles. Maya peered through the small gap.
"Come on,"
she shouted, running along the fence toward the front of the school.
"He left the school grounds. He's on the other side of the fence,"
she yelled at the policeman. He ran after us. From the other side of the fence, I could smell Jeffrey at the two poles, and from there I could track which direction he'd headed. Yes, he had gone this way. Abruptly, the scent faded. Just two steps on the route he'd taken, and I'd lost all sign of him, though it had been so strong there for a second.
"What is it?" the policeman asked.
"He might have gotten into a car," Maya said.
The policeman groaned. I dropped my nose, and that's when I picked it up again. I reversed direction, and the scent got stronger. In the street, water rushed down in a steady stream by the curb, gurgling into a storm drain. I shoved my snout into the gap, ignoring the smells carried into the drain by the rushing water, and concentrated on my nose. If I wanted to, I could wriggle through that gap and into the loud, wet drain, but there was no need to. I could smell Jeffrey now. He was right in front of me, even though I couldn't see him in the darkness. I looked up at Maya.
"My God! He's in there! He's in the sewer!"
Maya shouted. The policeman popped on a flashlight and beamed it into the storm drain. We all saw it at the same time. The pale face of a frightened little boy.
Chapter 25.
"Jeffrey, it's okay. We're going to get you out of there."
Maya yelled at him. Heedless of the water, she knelt in the street, straining to reach the boy. The water had pressed him back away from the small opening, and he was clinging to the far wall, the terror coming off him so strong it was blinding. Right behind Jeffrey, a black tunnel sucked in the rainwater with a loud roar. Grunting, Maya pushed in as far as she could, but she couldn't reach the boy.
"How did he get in there?" the policeman shouted.
"It's a tight fit. He must have squeezed in before it started raining. God, it's really coming down." Maya's voice was full of frustration. A circular iron plate was set into the concrete right above Jeffrey's head. The policeman pried at it with his fingers, muttering,
"I need to get a tire iron," he bellowed.
He handed the flashlight to Maya and ran off, his feet sloshing in the water. Jeffrey was shivering with cold, and his eyes were dull when they looked into the beam from Maya's flashlight. He had the hood of his thin, yellow rain slicker pulled up over his head, offering him scant protection from the chill.
"Hold on, okay, Jeffrey? You hang on. We're going to get you out of there, okay?"
Jeffrey didn't respond. The patrol car's siren came on, and within less than a minute it was whipping around the corner, sliding a little as it came to a stop next to us. The policeman jumped out and ran to his trunk.
"Fire and rescue are on the way," he hollered.
"There's no time," Maya shouted back. "He's slipping into the water."
The policeman came around the trunk with a bent piece of iron.
"Jeffrey, hang on, don't let go," Maya yelled.
The policeman went to work on the circular plate with his tool. When Maya jumped up to watch, I went with her, which was how I saw the spatter of mud fall on Jeffrey's face when the iron plate was knocked aside. He lifted his hand to wipe it away, and as he did so, he lost his grip on the wall and fell into the water. For a brief second, he was looking up at us, and then he was swept into the tunnel.
"Jeffrey!" Maya screamed.
I was still on find, so I didn't hesitate, plunging headfirst after him. The second I hit the water, the brute force of it carried me into the tunnel, and I swam in that direction. It was dark in the tunnel, and as I bobbed up and down in the current, my head struck the cement above me. I ignored all of it, concentrating on Jeffrey, who was ahead of me in the darkness, soundlessly fighting for his life. His scent was faint but there, vanishing and reappearing in the deadly waters. Without warning, the floor fell away beneath me, and in complete darkness I rolled and bounced. The smaller tunnel had joined a much larger one, the water deeper, the sounds louder. I zeroed in on Jeffrey's scent, swimming strongly. Though I couldn't see him, he was just a few yards in front of me. A second before he went under, I knew what was going to happen. How many times had Ethan pulled this same stunt on me, waiting until I was close before dropping down into the pond? And just as I always knew where to find the boy in the dark depths, I now had a clear sense of Jeffrey tumbling just below me. I dove, straining, my mouth open, blinded and battered by the rushing waters, and then I had his hood in my mouth. Together we burst through to the surface. There was no way to go in any direction except the way the water was taking us. I concentrated on holding Jeffrey's head out of the water, pulling back on the hood. He was alive, but he had stopped kicking. Some weak light from up ahead flickered on the wet cement walls. The tunnel we were in was square and 6 feet across, with no way out. How was I going to save Jeffrey? The light grew stronger, and as it did, my ears filled with a loud roar echoing back toward us. The current seemed to be accelerating. I kept my grip on Jeffrey's hood, sensing that something was about to happen. We burst into daylight, tumbling down a cement chute and landing with a splash in a swift-flowing river. I struggled to keep us both on the churning surface, battered by the waves. The banks of the river were lined with cement, but as I tugged Jeffrey toward the nearest one, the current fought me, trying to suck us back. Exhaustedly, my jaw and neck aching from the effort, I dragged Jeffrey toward the bank, swimming as hard as I could. Flashing lights caught my eye, and I saw men in raincoats downstream from me, running toward the bank. I would be swept past them before I could get Jeffrey to safety. Two of the men plunged into the water. They were tied together, and the rope went back to all the other men who braced themselves. The two men stood hip high, straining their hands out to catch us, and I put everything I had into aiming for their arms.
"Gotcha!"
one of the men shouted, as Jeffrey and I slammed into them. He grabbed my collar as the other man hoisted Jeffrey into the air. The rope went taut, and we all thrashed our way through the water to safety. Once I was on land, the man released me and knelt down over Jeffrey. They squeezed his little body, and he vomited up a gush of brown water, coughing and crying. I limped over to Jeffrey, and as his fear drained out of him, it took mine.